Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast. I'm Nate John, producer at Voice of San Diego, and this is a special episode. Full disclosure, the episode that we did record this week did not make it out due to some tech issues, but we didn't want to leave you hanging for the week, so I've got one of my favorite interviews here for you. Our now former editor, Maya Shrikrishnan, interviewed Scott Lewis, the host of your favorite local politics podcast. They reviewed the last 20-ish years of San Diego political history. I learned a lot from this conversation. I thought it was really good, and I think you'll like it too. This is a rerun interview originally dropped on New Year's Eve 2021. Let's get to it.
Can you tell us your name and who you are?
I am the very excited Scott Lewis. I am the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice San Diego, and proud first-time guest on San Diego 101.
Can you tell us how long you've been covering politics in San Diego?
Yeah, I arrived here in 2003. In fact, the weekend I arrived was the week that they raided City Hall in the so-called Cheetah Gate scandal, and that was my first introduction to San Diego politics.
What was the Cheetah Gate scandal?
So there were three city council members, Michael Zucchett, who is currently on the port and runs the largest employees union at the city of San Diego. He was a city council member, and two others, Ralph Nzunza and Charles Lewis, were being investigated because they had supposedly made quid pro quo deals with a strip club operator. And Zucchett was later exonerated, but Nzunza spent some time in prison, and Charles Lewis unfortunately died the next year.
How did he die?
So it's unknown. He had cirrhosis, but it's not necessarily the typical cause of cirrhosis. So
it was like a medical issue. It wasn't like related
well,
to...
I mean, his intense stress of being under the threat of going to federal prison was probably not helpful.
So when you think about the recent history of San Diego politics, when would you start it?
Well, of course, since everything's about me, it'd be then.
We knew you were going to say that.
I do think there is something about that time. 2004 in particular was a really weird year. That was the year Charles Lewis died, and there were a lot of shenanigans about who was going to replace him. They tried to like really maneuver it so that his predecessor could take that job instead of Tony Young, who ended up getting it. But there was that going on. And that was also the year of the write-in campaign for Donna Fry for mayor. So she, there was a lot of scandals going on in the city of San Diego. She wanted to run for mayor, didn't really do it. There were two typical Republican white guys running in the runoff. And she decides to do this incredible write-in campaign. And
she was not a Republican.
No, she's a Democrat, and it just exploded. I've never seen anything like that. Still haven't since. It just blew up as a popular sort of movement, and she ended up getting the most votes, but 5,000 or so of the votes were thrown out because the people wrote her name in, but they didn't actually fill in the bubble next to her name. And so the court and the lawyers for the other candidates said they didn't count.
That sucks.
Yeah. So it was like the moment that, like, that was a progressive sort of, you know, she has a lot of like neighborhood protection sort of angles, but she was super, you know, got a lot of support from the labor unions. That was the first time I saw them really kind of flex too in a mayoral campaign. And she got the most votes. And after that, they reformed the write-in process. So you can't run a write-in in the runoff, because that was a little bit of an in-run around the primary. You need a primary for a reason. But I think that was a big moment. There were so many scandals going on. There was so much going on at that moment. And that was also the year that Mike Aguirre got elected as city attorney. And so everything just sort of, it was like just a big time of change and transition.
Why was it a big deal that Mike Aguirre was elected city attorney that year?
He had a completely different interpretation of what the city attorney's role was. So he believed that the city attorney should represent the people, and that it was an elected position because it represented the people. And of course, they'd always operated that the city attorney was the lawyer for the city, the corporation known as the city. And that's kind of what it is. It has to represent the city in all these different lawsuits or whatever. And so he really worked it so that he could actually be this independent, or tried to make it this independent thing that would investigate or even sue the entity that it was supposedly representing. It caused a tremendous upheaval. But I think he really articulated a lot of longstanding frustrations about the way that San Diego was operating as well, with the Chargers or with the you know, different ways it had handled special interests and such. So Donna Frye and him represented this sort of left leaning kind of populist upheaval that occurred at that time. And I think that ended up morphing into an actual progressive movement over time.
So would you say that the scandal sort of represented the collapse or the demise of like the system that had been in place, and some of like Aguirre and Frye represented like a change at that point?
There was the city had this massive financial problem that people were starting to wake up to would have like impacts on everything of how it worked, how everything from emergency responses to parks. And they represented the anger about that. And that anger was directed at not a Republican establishment as much as this sort of Southern California conservative establishment. Do you know what I mean? This kind of businessy, Reagan-y type thing.
If you could describe like City Hall and city politics when you first started covering them in like a few words, how would you describe them?
I think I would use something along the lines of conflict averse and bipartisan, but not in the like flowery, like bipartisan is good kind of way. More of just bipartisan as in part of the game. It was, you know, the unions, for example, labor unions used to support the Republicans on the city council. That would be just very difficult to comprehend now. But it wasn't like there was some just like bipartisan sort of happiness or just grace. You know, it wasn't that everything was running well and everybody looked past identity and partisanship and had some kumbaya situation. It was more just like it was a very insular world that very few people understood and that just didn't get a lot of popular scrutiny from. And there was this movement happening when I got here and others that was just like to kind of mess with that. There was just a popular effort to uproot that, to change it, to hit it a lot. And honestly, I think Voice San Diego is part of that. We were formed in 2005 in part because there was this impression that there wasn't enough sort of push happening, right? That there wasn't enough kind of like disruption of that.
And at this time, what was going on at the county level, politics-wise?
The county had come out of maybe 10 years of its own sort of financial reckoning. So in the mid-90s, they'll always talk about there was like a period where it looked like the county was going to go bankrupt. And some leaders that took over that role and then the board of supervisors that were elected in that time period, they were conservative, very focused on financial and fiscal conservatism. And they had a couple of major leaders of the county government who were good, you know, at least in their mind, as far as managing money. And so the county went from being this, it's going to fall apart, to this like just operating well in their eyes. And then also just a major focus on suppressing social welfare benefits, right? Like food stamps, any kind of welfare aid that was going out. They wanted to use whatever powers they had to suppress it, to keep it limited. And at the same time, they all went through in the 2000, 2001, 2002 era, a major effort of enhancing public employee pension benefits and compensation benefits. So it had this perverse effect of like, you know, they were giving out fewer benefits to the public, and then they were giving away more to their workers. And so it created this another new lopsided financial situation. But there's a really curious, when you look back, when we think of the San Diego pension scandal, it was focused on the city. And I think that the reason it was focused on the city and not on the county, even though they both did the same thing, was because the county was responsible for delivering social welfare benefits above all. And the city was focused on like parks and roads and things that frankly more wealthy people cared about. And I think that because Republicans were in charge of the county, and because they were doing things that didn't affect in the same way the same more vocal, already involved groups of people, that they were insulated from some of that political scandal.
And can you briefly explain the pension scandal?
Yeah, basically, there was just this wave that occurred in the early 2000s, late 90s, where every government decided to enhance the benefits of their employees, their pension benefits. But in the county, for example, they didn't just say like, you're going to get a 50% better pension going from now into the future. They did it as a retroactive benefit. So everybody, you know, if you were expecting a $60,000 a year pension at the county, in one day you woke up and that was $90,000. And just that moment, more people retired from the county the moment that happened than it ever in any month before that done. It was because it was suddenly it was 50% more lucrative to retire then. That was great for them, but it changed the calculus so that the county went from putting $0 into the pension funds to having to put several hundred million dollars into the pension funds again every year. And again, that's money that's directed and meant for people who are struggling the most in San Diego. So I found that particularly offensive. But the city had a similar situation. But the problem with the city is that they went further. They enhanced pension benefits, but then they also made a deal with the city where the city would pay less into the pension system at the same time. So it just kind of combined to create this massive deficit and make it worse at the same time. So it was just it was like a political and legal scandal at the same time, where the counties was just a fiscal one.
So how do you think city politics have changed since then, since the early 2000s?
Well, there was, again, this world where, you know, the public employee unions would support Republicans, and Republicans would, there was just this, Republicans were just the establishment, and they were the ones in charge. Democrats were far minority for a long time. And I think there was sort of two personalities that really emerged in the 2000s in San Diego politics. So Lorena Gonzalez ran for city council against Kevin Faulkner in 2006. She lost and then started working for the Labor Council. And I think her work at the Labor Council helped turn the Labor Council from a voice in the business community to a movement, to truly a movement, where you needed to get on board with these priorities or you weren't part of that movement, right? And then on the other side, Carl DeMaio runs for city council and also showed up in this like bravado of right-wing sort of fiscal conservatism and also made the same kind of deal with the right. And so there was this like this polarization that began happening in 2006 and 2007 where it wasn't that world was kind of shattered. Brian Mainstein was a Republican who was friendly with the unions and all that. You had to pick a side. And that just became the kind of thing over the next few years. The labor movement became stronger and more organized and better at organizing for politics. And then the Republican and conservative side became more focused on attack and on major reforms they wanted to see happen.
And so did that ultimately then lead to, you know, more progressive politics because entities like the labor unions became more organized with, you know, those movements and values?
I think that there was also a decision they made in 2004 based on some of these scandals and such that were happening that they were going to change the San Diego city government from a city council-led city manager form of government, which was being blamed for this kind of insidery, like, go along, get along world. And they made the switch to a strong mayor form of government where the mayor would be the chief executive. And I think that raised the stakes of mayoral elections in particular, but also city council in a different way. There was a city council president for the first time. And it set in motion that you would need more movement politics to succeed in San Diego. So you kind of had to pick, are you going to be part of this sort of populist, right of center conservative group, or are you going to be part of this labor group? And the labor group was also more diverse and more inclusive, and there was a rising involvement of people of color as well. And I think that they found a place more on the left. And so that obviously became the winning side in a way. And I think partly because of the demographics, but also because of the movement and what they wanted and the sort of limited interest of the right side of the politics.
What year did the change with the strong mayor form of government happen?
The vote was in 2004 and it implemented in 2006. So remember that, again, I joked that it was that year that it was so important that things happened, but there was so much upheaval then. And that strong mayor thing was put in motion in 2004. And then the first strong mayor was 2006.
And how have county politics changed since then?
Well, the county, as far as the board of supervisors and the sheriff, the DA, those stayed very, very stable. And I'm not sure why. I think a lot of people always ask me why the county was insulated from this upheaval in the same way. And I make the argument in two ways. One, that they focus on things that rich people don't care about. And again, social welfare and such. And then the second is that nobody understands what the county does. It's so the understanding of what a county supervisor's job is compared to a city council person's job is just so, there's just such a gulf between those two things.
And there were no term limits for county supervisors until 2011?
It was around then. Yeah, so the city did have term limits, yes. And you know if your neighborhood's struggling with something that it's the city council person's responsibility. And there's a connection there. County supervisor, there's no similar thing. You can talk to anybody who's run for county supervisor, and they'll go and they'll talk to people in their homes, and they have to spend most of those conversations explaining what that role is, even though they get paid double. You know, they get paid double, they get a better pension, they get more benefits. They're in many ways dealing with a much less difficult job because those decisions had never become so stark. And so I think that the county remained isolated from that political change because it had no term limits. Nobody understood what those roles were. And it was the power of incumbency was just so powerful.
But the county has recently started to change, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that recent wave that has happened?
Yeah. So, well, there was, just like with the city, there were some glimmers of change. Dave Roberts had been elected in the coastal North County district. as a Democrat. And so a lot of people thought that as the one Democrat, he'd go in there and he'd like shake some things loose. He'd release some documents. There'd be a lot more news and stories. There'd be more scandals. There'd be more strife. There'd be more conflict. And it would produce more politics that could produce more change. And in fact, he did none of that. He just was another face in there. And then he had his own scandals and trouble, and it was just a mess for him. And so that fell, and Kristen Gaspar took that seat, and it was kind of the same. And so it waited until Nathan Fletcher decided to run for the county supervisor. And the unions and everybody kind of really got behind him, not just as like somebody who would go in and maybe release some things and change some things, but they fully invested in him with the hope that he would lead a bigger change. And whatever amount of that change is due to him or not, it did lead. There was, two more who were elected right after that.
We're going to take a quick break and pay the bills. More history on the other side. Stay with us. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
So we talked about some of these things, but if you could list maybe like the five biggest things that have happened in the past 20 years that we're describing that have, you know, pushed real change in San Diego politics, what are they?
I guess you'd call it like the fiscal awakening of the 2003, 4, 5, 6 era, where there was just the realization that the city had overpromised on so many different fronts and was in tremendous debt and may have to go bankrupt. That was a big deal in local politics, and it really made you choose a side. Did you support these kind of harsh discussions about reform, and or did you support the labor unions and a kind of different vision of that? And that really created a cleave in local politics. The strong mayor change, that was huge because it was accompanied with a change in the city council as well. They added a 9th district, and there was that whole, you know, from 2004 to 2010, that whole reform of how the government works was huge. I think that George Bush was preferred by San Diego County voters in 2004, George W. Bush. That was the last Republican who won a presidential race in San Diego County. And I think that it's not really a moment as much as a marker of how fast it changed after that. And at that point, there you'd have to describe this more amorphous rising of voices that occurred right in 2008 through 16, where there's more diversity. You have Lorena Gonzalez really polarizing and talking about the left and building a movement. You had the the sort of throes of a conservative movement that was focused on really obsessed with public employee salaries, really, and compensation, and not a broader sort of outline of what should happen to San Diego. And then I think the environmental movement is really important as well. Like, there was, you couldn't really be a Republican and an environmentalist. You know, they'd always talked about coastal Republicans and you know, this kind of enviro kind of Republican, but it was, that just kind of lost. Like, they never really were into that. So if you cared about anything from sewage spills to open space preservation, you kind of had to go to the left. And so there were a lot of people who may be wealthy, maybe for whatever reason, care about the more right of center politics. They found themselves in that left coalition as well.
So you mentioned Lorena several times, but were there any other like defining people that helped sort of like push that change in San Diego politics?
Yeah, I think Donna Frye was a big personality. You know, her top aide for a long time was Nicole Kapritz, and she's now leading kind of the you know, climate change effort. She learned a lot about politics and organizing through that experience with Donna Frye. I think there's again, there's the Mike Aguirre's, the Scott Peters. He was the first San Diego City Council president, and I don't think he changed anything as much as sort of set the precedent that could be a powerful position, and was kind of the last voice of this world where bipartisan understanding existed. There are a lot of people who were involved in a lot of these discussions. You look at somebody like Bob Filner, though. He comes out of nowhere, runs for mayor, and makes it 2012. Yeah, wow. 2012, he wins that election. That seemed like the moment where it had flipped finally, where it was now a Democrat's seat. And his falling apart, by the way, I think ushered in a false assumption from the Republicans that they were still relevant, because they got another 7 years in the mayor's office after that happened, and probably wouldn't have gotten that were it not for that.
So I guess, like, for people who haven't really been paying attention to politics in San Diego, and they want to know, why are we in the place that we are today with, like, who's on the city council, how the city council and the mayor's office work, why the county is the way it is, what are the things that they need to know, and what are some of the things that might just be, like, fun for them to know?
This town is still overly influenced in a small town kind of way, in a way where people make a lot of decisions in smaller groups, and that have major ramifications for the years to come. And I think one of the ones I always like to tell is in 2013, when Bob Filner had resigned or was resigning. And remember, the Republicans are still a relevant force in local politics, and I wouldn't say they are now. There are different types of Democrats, but we're pretty close to where the Republican Party has no role in city politics. But then in 2013, it still did. And there was this moment when Mayor Filner had basically signaled he was going to leave. And the Republicans got together in this mansion in La Jolla, in the house of a developer. And there was like 35 people there. I think there was like two women. And they were in there in this mansion deciding who was going to be the Republican to run for mayor. There were three candidates: Carl DeMaio, who had run before, lost to Bob Filner; Ron Roberts, who had wanted to be mayor since he was for like 30 years. He had run three or four times already, and he was on the board of supervisors. And then Kevin Faulkner. He'd been on the city council, and they decided in this group, and they started fighting, yelling at each other. And they decide that they want to go with Kevin Faulkner, and he ends up running and winning. He beats David Alvarez, who was pretty well funded with the labor union's support, but you know, couldn't, because of a special election and a few other reasons, couldn't overcome the sort of traditional network that was in place. But that had immediate ramifications for a long time. Like, there was a cleave on the right between Carl DeMaio and the rest of the Republicans that now is, I think, represented by this cleave in Republican politics nationally, where there's the MAGA Carl DeMaio type Republicans, and then there's the this coastal that still wants to have coastal fiscal conservative Republican politics somewhere in San Diego. And then for they ended up picking Kevin Faulkner, who could win that race, and I think that stalled the development of this Democratic wave, this more inclusive and diverse wave, for quite some time. And I think it probably changed San Diego for a long time because of that, because he was able to keep the police chiefs in place, keep the same policies he'd had in place, and structure things in a way that would have been a lot different if a Filner or somebody else had been going through that process. And so I think that I think that's an important way, because there's still rooms like that where decisions like that are happening. And I consider it a major part of our role to open those rooms up as much as we can, so that people understand the conversations that are happening in there and can someday be a part of them.
How did you find out about what happened in that mansion?
I three or four people who were there called me after that, and I was able to get a few of them to agree to be unmentioned sources and to triangulate how it all came together. Yeah.
Earlier, we kind of asked you to describe how San Diego politics were in the early 2000s in a few words. How would you describe the political landscape today in a few words?
I think it's more diverse, but it's more uncertain. It's unclear to me what big things and major changes this group will try to take, and whether there is something more powerful about San Diego that will continue, and that being, like, it's still just easier to go along with things as they are. You know, in some of the work you're doing about redistricting, the same thing. There's inertia to preserving things that is going to be very difficult to overcome, even when you elect people from different backgrounds and different perspectives. I think that still has a power here. And I don't know if it's unique among other places, but there is a aversion to conflict. There's an aversion to change that is very powerful here. And I'm uncertain, as I said, like how that will be resolved with what are very strident and clear calls that it be disrupted. Todd Gloria, to me, is a little bit more to the left Kevin Faulkner. I think that he would hate that. He's probably gonna be very mad that I said that. But I think that he hired many of the same people. We talked to somebody who supported Bree. She said she supported Bree because she had the guts. She used a different word, but the guts to do big different things, and that you needed somebody who would do that. And that she, I think, and others saw, and Todd Gloria's really showing that it's not that he's necessarily scared. It's just a lot safer to not disrupt everything. And I think that he hired a lot of the same people, has a lot of the same views, with a little bit of a twist and a nod to more progressive politics, maybe along things like police and others. But I think there will always be, or for a long time, there'll be this vein of conservatism that's not necessarily right of center as much as just, this is the way it's done, and maybe I'll manage it with a little bit different flavor. There's when I try to think about people, I kept thinking in a name and I didn't know if it would work or not, but I do think it matters. There was a man who worked for the Building Trades Council, Murtaza Baksa-Musa, who added an intellectual structure to a lot of the left-leaning policy ideas and debates that I think had major ramifications going forward. Whether it was like how we should run redevelopment, or how different taxes should work, or how the housing commission should work, or there was a rigor on the left that started to emerge, and it seems like academic, but it was really powerful in how it shaped policies and what they wanted to do. And I think that just showed that there was an emerging like professionalization of politics in San Diego on the left. So it was always discussed that on the right it was more professional, that the right had moneyed interests like restaurants and builders, and they funded political consultants and others who ran things here as professionals. And that the left was always like activists and like, you know, people taking the time out of their day to go and pursue. And there's been a major shift. I believe it's almost the opposite now, that the left is professional. The left has more professional everything from policy, academics to consultants. And the right is now just a bunch of activists. That's not totally true. But if you're representing a lot of those industries that supported the Republicans, then I think the biggest thing I'm watching is how many of them are shifting to add that professionalism to the left so they can preserve the interests and the goals that they still want out of local politics.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast in San Diego. This interview was originally done to inform our San Diego 101 podcast series. You can check that out now wherever you're listening. There's a lot of good stories in there about affordable housing development, special education, redistricting, and more. So just search San Diego 101 in your podcast app or go to sd101.org. I'm Nate John, producer at Voice of San Diego. Andrew Keats and Andrea Lopez Villafana are our managing editors. Scott Lewis is our CEO and editor-in-chief. And Maya Shri Krishnan was our editor for civic engagement. And I miss her dearly. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.